welcome to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa with your hosts, Rob Lori, myself, Tanya Vidovic, and joining us from the phone is Jungle Jay. Glad to have you, Jungle.
Morning.
Good morning. So the Sustainable Living Show is a unique show where every other Monday we bring you local experts on different aspects of sustainability. This week, we will be discussing sustainability in business with local expert Sharon Hannah West. Welcome, Sharon. Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. So Sharon Hannah West is a graduate instructor of ethics, law, and sustainable business practices at the University of South Florida, Muma College of Business in Tampa, Florida. She is also the Sustainable Business Concentration Director at the USF Patel College of Global Sustainability. So thank you for joining us on our show, Sharon.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is exciting.
You're an expert in sustainability in business. Can you explain what that means?
Oh, dear. Calling me an expert. Well, sustainability in business, what it really means is, you know, what it takes to make a business sustainable. And I've really spent my whole career in trying to develop ways to do that. Business, you know, when you think about it, most of our environmental harm can be traced to economic activity. So it seems like it's the logical spot where we need to really make changes, change our business models to help the planet become, well, the human race become sustainable. The planet's going to be just fine. It's what's left on it that's in question. So sustainable business means flipping your models around, doing business in ways that help and don't harm. The ultimate goal is to create businesses that are actually restorative. That's the next big level on the R's, the reduce, reuse, recycle, restore. We have one company in the world that's actually beginning to do that.
What company is that? And what do you mean by restore?
Well, you've probably been reading that many of the large corporations in the world have been making some pretty serious changes. We've had, you know, Starbucks that has pledged to become resource positive. That means that, you know, they will be putting back instead of taking. Now, that seems like a pretty strange concept. Microsoft has promised to be carbon negative by 2030. Lots and lots of companies are doing this, but Interface Floor, which is the world's largest carpet manufacturer, pledged to become sustainable, 100% sustainable by 2020. Back in, it was really 1993 when Ray Anderson was still around. And it's a wonderful story. Do we have a quick second to talk about it?
Oh, we have a whole hour. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's really one of the most inspiring stories that, and I think, you know, he became a leader, an evangelist in the whole movement and helped to spark interest and commitment by a lot of other large corporations, including Walmart, but we can get to that later. So the story goes that with Interface, back in 1993, Ray Anderson had grown this company that he'd started in the 70s into this big powerhouse. But when you think about it, carpet manufacturing is probably one of the most linear, extractive, polluting, water-consuming, high-energy consumption industries that you could possibly get into. So he was asked by some clients, some architects and interior designers who represented some of their more high-end business, shall we say, to give a talk about what his company's plans were to reduce their environmental footprint. And he said later, he said, I really did not want to make that speech because I didn't have a plan. So somebody in his office left a copy of Paul Hawkins' original book, The Ecology of Commerce. That's a must-read for all of you, if you want to kind of see, you know, what the footprint of business is and really what business can do to get out of it. Left it on his desk. He said he was desperate for some ideas, so he started to read it. He took it home. Home was Atlanta. He found himself sitting in bed at 2 a.m. with tears coming down his face because he realized this big company, you know, his life's work was actually committing to huge destruction in the natural world. And so during his talk the next day, he said, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to become, you know, carbon neutral, resource neutral, energy neutral by 2020. And his board of directors thought he had lost his mind. We were fortunate to have Ray Anderson come and speak at USF. We had our first sustainable business symposium back in 2006. And he came and spoke, got a standing ovation, and talked about what the journey was to get there. Now, keep in mind, this is the 90s. Before, a lot of people were really
even discussing it, yeah.
Accepted. Yeah, and you know, climate science, the pushback on it was huge. So he was really swimming upstream. He also, as I said, he became an evangelist for it. He gave up his position as CEO and just, you know, took his talks on the road. It was very good for them, though.
So if a business like that can do it, it just seems like it should be available as an option for a lot of these businesses. And do we actually?
You know, Tanja, you're absolutely right. He said in a TED talk, he said, if we can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And they did do it. And in fact, they did it a year early. And so now the next journey is, you know, they made their goals in 2019. And so the next phase is to be restorative and actually, you know, leave the world in a better spot than you found it, not just a neutral spot, not just neutralizing your footprint, which I think is laudable in and of itself.
And if I can jump in, if I can jump in real quick, I just want to reinforce that I was following Anderson back in during that time, and William McDonough and the cradle design, and it's amazing that Anderson was actually able to make this happen.
I agree wholeheartedly, particularly in that era. You know, now people get it; the big companies get it. You know, my whole goal with the work that we do at USF is, you know, we learn from what the big companies do. The Fortune 500 companies, they have chief sustainability officers. They're moving, you know, they're turning their ships around. They're changing their models. But more than 80% of our economy is not Fortune 500. You know, it's small business, medium business, some, you know, even large businesses, and they're not doing that. And so what we've tried to do over the years is come up with ways, you know, just kind of to simplify the whole process. Because I remember McKinsey did a survey, and they said that more than 74% of the CEOs in the world said that they felt the main reason that more companies were not being involved in this was due to complexity. And you know, he's right. It is very complex. It can seem daunting. And when you take people from the business curriculum that usually don't have this kind of information, you can expect results that don't reflect environmental stewardship if they don't understand it. And then they get into corporations, and they're doing everything they can just to keep the doors open. So what do? We've got to make it profitable. And that's one thing that Anderson and all of those guys were able to demonstrate is, yes, it can be, and it must be profitable.
Well, and you know, you bring up a good point. A lot of the people think that they're going to lose a lot of revenue if they become more sustainable. Is that a real concern?
I think it's a concern there, but I think it's also a myth. What we do, even in our projects, you know, the students in their 12-week projects, they have to do kind of a what, why, and ROI on every recommendation that they make. So it's got to make financial sense. We can't ask businesses to do something that's unprofitable. So what Anderson was able, I'll never forget this too, when he was standing in our atrium at MUMA, got this standing ovation, then took Q&A, and the first question, of course, was, okay, this is great, but what did it cost you? And he was ready for it. He threw some slides up and he said, you know what? Not only has it not cost us anything, the entire ride into this date, you know, it's true for Interface, has resulted in substantial savings. Back then, he laid out that they had saved more than $143 million from 1993 to 2006 in savings just by becoming efficient, lowering their, you know, energy costs, deferred waste, you know, pushing chemicals out of the processes that didn't need to be there, and on and on and on. And it was fabulous.
So
that got people's attention.
No, absolutely. I mean, these are all really important things to talk about when talking about business. But do we actually need these changes?
Do we need them?
Yeah. When a lot of business owners probably think, do we need to make the changes? Is the earth in a position where we need to make the changes to actually save it?
The changes, they're absolutely critical. If we don't make them, this is not going to come out well. And the window of opportunity is closing. We know that the time is now. We have to act now. And really, some people are seeing a silver lining in the pandemic in that we know we can do some of these things because we're doing without now. We know that we can clean up our air quickly if we have to and if we're motivated to. Yes, we have to. It's a moral imperative, and I think it's quickly becoming a financial one, too.
I think it was part of Anderson's epiphany that the waste stream was the biggest portion of it, and it was a paradigmatic shift that he made away from the idea of designed obsolescence, where you design your product to be thrown away so you can replace it, and where he was separating his carpet products into reusable parts.
Yeah,
and I think, where that savings came in.
Sure. I mean, I think that was a substantial part of it. The following year, we had one of his engineers come and give a talk. You know, so Ray was talking about, okay, what you can do and why you should do it. And his engineer came and talked about how they did it. And one of the projects that they were involved in involved piping methane as a fuel out of a landfill in Atlanta. And he talked about kind of the difficulties that they faced in doing that project, and that they were even advised at the time by the EPA not to do it. And long story short, they had all caught the fever. And so they thought, well, you know what, we're just going to make this work. Long story short, they did. And then they ended up getting an award from the EPA for doing that. But, just getting switching their energy sources, deferred waste, taking that carpet back, grinding it up, making it into new carpeting. Yes, those are ways that you can make, you capture a lot of savings.
And so when we talk about sustainability in business, the core principles, can you talk a little bit more about those three core principles?
The core principles of what? Waste?
Profit, people, and planet?
Oh, the three pillars.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said the wrong
one. No, absolutely. Yeah. Again, it's also about rethinking. Sustainability requires holistic thinking. So in business, we're taught, and I mean, I have business experience too, and I think it's important to do that because you have to understand, you know, what the challenges are in order to really be able to speak the language on, you know, yes, we understand and this is how we fix it. But when you think about it, we've also changed. You know, back in the old days, people were taught the whole Milton Friedman mantra, you know, that the only responsibility of a business is to make a profit, and that if we did anything contrary to making a profit, that in and of itself was unethical. And that's how I got into this, was through ethics. And so then stakeholder theory kind of came along. And Professor Freeman, so it's like Friedman and Freeman, it's difficult to distinguish the two, but they are different. So Professor Freeman came along and he took these ideas of many people and said, well, you know what, if business really wants to make a profit, they have to think in terms of the stakeholders that might be, you know, involved in that. And by stakeholders, we mean anybody who feels that they're being impacted by that business. So in the old days, we were taught to think, okay, that's our stockholders, our customers, our employees, and the government. That's what a corporation has to look at. And then we started adding communities to that. And then lo and behold, through ethics, we were able to make a business case and show that you will be much more profitable if you do the right thing, so to speak. But your stakeholders could also be like the media, competitors, suppliers, trade associations, the whole bit, unions, religious groups, you know, the planet, certainly future generations, the poor, and on. And so we have to pay attention to the people who kind of go in and out of that. So that's the social piece, the people planet. The fact that we have to be good stewards in our communities, because really when you think about it, society gives us the license to operate, and society can take it away quickly, and they do that. And so, you know, the profit part we understand, but then the planet was the last piece to kind of come along. And, you know, we were able to show through stakeholder theory that, you know, a corporation, say, that is dependent on finite resources to make its stuff, if they're not paying attention to that or looking for alternatives, that's a corporation in decline and they don't even know it. And so slowly but surely, the planet part also became part of the people and profit part.
Awesome. And I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to WMNF Tampa, the Sustainable Living Show. And today we're discussing sustainability in business with local expert Sharon Hannah West. So do you think that our businesses, local and global, have a responsibility to think about their decisions and how those decisions are impacting the rest of the planet?
Personally, I absolutely do. And I think that businesses do as well. You know, in the old days, corporations felt that they were part of communities. They were responsible to communities. People knew who they were, who was walking, you know, working for them. And so they felt more of a part of that. I think as they grew in size, that's when anonymity started to come in. And, you know, we kind of had... We took the faces away from our stakeholders. Today, that's kind of coming back. With the age of information, we can find out anything we want about somebody very quickly, publicize it, which is what you all do well, and, you know, then, you know, also ask for responsibility accordingly.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to mention, I forgot to say that if anybody has any questions for you, email us at dj@wmnf.org. Give us a call at 813-239-9663 or send us a text at 813-433-0885. So you talked a little bit about simplifying the process of business models and becoming more sustainable. So how does somebody figure out how to simplify this process? How do they get started?
It's tough. The good thing is...
No, you're supposed to say it's simple.
There are many, many resources available to them today. There are websites, there are organizations, there are nonprofits, all of which can help to, you know, give some information or, you know, offer resources on that. What I did with my class is I tried to come up with a template, and it took me more than 7 years to really simplify it, and I think I now have it down. But... basically, it's a three-step process. A company should look at itself and do even an informal assessment. What have we done to date that has anything remotely to do with sustainability, environmental stewardship, social stewardship? Make a list on that. Look at things like, do you have a mission statement? If you don't, make one. Incorporate that into your mission statement. Do you have a sustainability plan? Do you report? Probably not. Okay, so then what do you do about it? I think the next step, so you do the assessment, then do the vision. And this is kind of a fun one. You just envision what your company would look like if it was 100% sustainable. And sometimes that seems almost impossible to achieve. Don't look at that. Look at that as the pin on the map that you need to drop. That's your goal. And then the plan part. Okay, so where do you begin? There are so many aspects of sustainability, and it means so many things to different people. So, again, let's make an objective approach to this. So what we do is we broke it down into just blocks. The first one is purchasing. One of the easiest ways you can reduce your footprint is with a green purchasing policy. Basically, you throw it on the backs of your supply chain, which is okay. That's step one, because that will impact step two, which is waste. What can you do to minimize waste? Aveda has a questionnaire. They They look at, you know, is it, can we reuse it? Is it recyclable? Do we need it? So they go through this questionnaire to look at their waste stream. We then look at energy. When we work with companies that have never done anything with sustainability, we can be pretty bold and say, you know, we can save you probably 30-35% in energy just your first year alone if you want to try this. And that gets people's attention because businesses need to save money. So we also look at water, water usage. We think of saving, capturing, processing, facilities, anywhere that water could be used. We look at transportation. That could be your fleet or your commuters, how your employees are coming, what your customer trips are, shipping. We look at marketing. Now, with marketing, with sustainability, there's messaging that involves internal stakeholders and external stakeholders. So we think about telling the story to both of those. The internal ones, of course, are going to be our employees, our, you know, people that work with us, probably even through our supply chain, but externally it's going to be our customers, the public. We want to be sincere, accurate with what we tell them, set publicly announced goals, and then report on how we're doing it.
And when you say we, are you talking about as a business, as a person who audits businesses, or as from the from your university and your students?
No, I'm really thinking about the business itself. What I've tried to do is make this available to companies. Like our students work on these projects. I teach graduate courses in business sustainability, and every year we do projects of their choice, or sometimes companies ask us to do them. Sometimes they're small companies, sometimes they're big. We've done anything from mom and pop pizza companies to, we've done a couple of big 500s, but that was more for the student, you know, education. We finished one last fall for Tech Data. We are going to be doing one, or it's been in discussion anyway, with Raymond James this fall. So anybody who's interested, one is, you know, reach out to university partners and see what they're doing, because oftentimes we've got courses that are working on these kinds of things, and we're happy to take volunteers.
And is there,
so, go ahead.
Is there like a business that audits other businesses and kind of shows them the way to be green?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are lots of reporting mechanisms and software out there, and companies. There are also lots of consultants, and we have some excellent companies in the Bay Area that have a high degree of literacy in this and work with companies as well. Now, that's going to cost money. So oftentimes these university projects with students will be step one because they're free.
that sounds good, I'm sure, to most businesses.
Sure, why not? And, you know, you're finished in 12 weeks. So I always tell we call them clients, your best case scenario or your worst case scenario is we give you something you just can't use. Sorry. The best case scenario, we've had some of these plans that have really been top drawer. I mean, the equivalent to, you know, consulting, basic consulting and sustainability, and it's free and it gets them going.
Absolutely. And I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa. If you have any questions, send us an email, dj@wmnf.org, or send us a text, 813-433-0885. And we are here discussing sustainability in business with local expert Sharon Hannah West. So can more sustainable business practices help with economic development locally?
Absolutely. It seems crazy that we would want to do any business that wasn't sustainable. I mean, think about that. The whole goal of a corporation, of any kind of a company, is to be sustainable. So when they think about sustainability, they should not be just thinking about one pillar. Now, and that tends to be the environment these days. And that's also the one that many businesses have the least amount of literacy in. But the reason I talk to my students, and this is just my opinion, this is not based on research or anything, the reason we talk so much about the environmental pillar these days is because that's the one that's facing us, you know, dead center of fix me or else. This is critical timing. So, and it's also the one that many argue that we've paid the least amount of attention to. And so that's why I think it gets the most news, so to speak. And I also think that's okay, because we need to tackle it. When we tackle the environmental footprint, the adverse impact that we may have, it's good for everybody. Many companies have shown it's good for profits. It's always going to be good for profits if you have a long-term lens. Unfortunately, some businesses only use a short-term lens, or maybe they're feeling forced to have a short-term lens, and so they skip it. But it's going to be the recipe for failure when it catches up to you. But if we have cleaner air, if we have cleaner water, if we have more resources, that's good for society.
No, absolutely. And with new businesses, like let's say that, you know, you're opening up a new business, and some businesses just say, I'm going to do it later once the business is established and open and making money. Is that the right outlook, or is it easier to start your business sustainable from the get-go?
Well, yeah, it's always easier to start, you know, with a sustainable business model than it is to try to retrofit later. For one thing, it's just going to be a question of time. Why spend the time on it twice? Do it right the first time. And then, you know, you learn as you go, but you don't make the mistakes that then have to be fixed. So, yeah, absolutely, it's much, much easier to do it right the first time. And it's not as though we have to tackle everything at once. I would love it if all companies did that. But again, if we could get everybody to just do the first 30%, we can buy some time for figuring out maybe some of the other things that we need to do. Ray Anderson used to like to say that we don't have to really invent anything new. We have all of the tools, the technology, the methodologies that we need to do this right. It's just we have to change mindsets. And, you know, to me, it's not the business. You know, business isn't the bad guy in this. Business just needs to be educated to do it, because we haven't educated them properly initially.
And is there, how much more time and money is it to be sustainable as a business? And is it easy to find sustainable options? Like, is there a one-stop shop for all your sustainable needs that... like the Lowe's or Home Depot of sustainability?
Well, no. but the resources are out there. Again, I think we kind of come back to that problem of complexity. People look at this and they just throw their hands up and they say, I don't know where to start. And so again, I think it becomes a mindset, you know, your ability to just organize and look at it. And that's why I tried to develop the template that I did, because it's a baseline. And if we can do that and take companies up to, say, that first third in 12 weeks, then they can do this. You know, then the rest of it will be, you know, you get down into the weeds and figure out, you go from basic to mid-level to deep dive to then you're there. And again, companies that have gone ahead of us in this have reported that that first third really isn't that tough of a climb. It's just, like you said, finding the resources or figuring out the ways, and many of them are right in front of our faces and we don't even know it. For instance, most energy providers have alternatives. They have energy credits. They have resources that they can give you for alternative, you know, green energy. It's right there. You just need to look for it. So if you have kind of a game plan, a rough outline of what you want to do in front of you, then you check off boxes. And companies do it in different ways. Sometimes there's one champion within. Oftentimes they'll have different sectors, like somebody who internally who's really interested in their waste stream and minimizing that. So they get together with the people that want to do recycling, and they form their teams on that. The facilities people can look at the built environment and say, you know, we can save money by doing X, Y, and Z here. Not necessarily a new building, but just in subtle retrofits. Like, they make paint additives now that are insulating, you know, so when you're repainting, just put some of that stuff in the paint and enjoy, you know, some subtle but real profit.
So it's just about making just different decisions. It's not about finding necessarily the thing that's just right on the shelf in front of you. It's about, you know, trying to make an educated decision.
That's well put. And just with all of these, there are options out there.
And I think data needs to be considered also, because a larger company, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them to start on a green path once they're already established. Whereas a smaller company, you know, that's just getting started, can incorporate these ideas and savings from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking about TerraCycle the floor carpeting product. It was difficult for him, but it started in a top-down approach from the CEO who brought this idea. And so that can translate easily into smaller companies like the 100 that the Sussman Foundation promoted here locally last year.
Were you at USF when we did the award announcements last year for the Sussman
I have several friends who were parts of businesses that were recognized and I think that that's a wonderful program.
Well, I think we've got two different approaches when it comes to sustainable business. Yes, oftentimes it's top-down. When you have top-down, in fact, that's one of the things we cover in class, then, you know, what you do takes one direction. When it's more bottom-up, and that's oftentimes the case, it was the case at USF years ago, then you do it differently. And what we recommend in those kinds of situations is that somebody who's interested in it, think about, first, who's making the decisions there. Think about a couple of projects that should be easy wins, show that it can be done, show that it can be profitable, and that's how you're going to get traction.
And I want to remind our listeners,
it's a learning curve.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to WMNF Tampa, the Sustainable Living Show. If you have any questions, send us an email, dj@wmnf.org, or send us a text, 813-433-0885. And if you're feeling friendly, you want to give us a call, 813-239-9663. And also, we are discussing sustainability in business with local expert Sharon Hannah West. So, Sharon, how do we get people to want to buy from sustainable businesses first?
Well, that's also part of the educational process. We just need to, science education in the United States has taken different paths than maybe it has in some other countries. For instance, in Europe, you can't graduate from high school in several countries in Europe without passing a course in climate change. When you have that kind of literacy in your population, then people make buying decisions that way. Leadership makes decisions with those kinds of considerations. And so it's really part of it is education. Now, the good thing is, because the media has been really putting this out there hard the last few years, there was another survey not long ago that McKinsey did, that said that in the United States, about 74% of the population now, you know, listens to environmental considerations, sustainable considerations in their purchasing decisions. So that's important too.
So it seems like it's about educating the population and making them aware. And
yeah, in the education part, it's not just media, it's not just higher ed, it's not just K-12, it's also ourselves. We had this wonderful spokesperson from Harvard who did the Harvard Green Project. This was probably 7 years ago. And she ended her talk with a statement on the power of one. And it went something like this. She said, you know, if you can go home tonight and convince three people about your idea, that it's the right thing to do, and then they go and convince three people each, right, and on, in 6 months, 64,000 people have changed their attitude. And so I think we all have that kind of an obligation to.
And how would just the everyday consumer, because, I mean, in reality, people are working hard and we're stressed out and they're not doing the research about the companies. Is there a way for consumers to know if a business is doing the right thing?
Sure. So one thing, the big companies are pretty much uniformly reporting this. If you want to take the time, and as you said, that's really research, you can look at their sustainability reports. Look at what they're reporting and what they're not reporting. But there are also standards and certifications in sustainability that are kind of bubbling up to the top and becoming the gold standard. For instance, in green building, it's probably going to be LEED. Now, there are people who say, well, there are others out there. Yes, there are. But LEED has done the best job with the USGBC, the United States Green Building Council, in advertising their standards. So LEED certification in buildings is one thing. With product manufacturing, we have them. With tourism, we have it. In restaurants, hotels. So there are pretty easy ways to check. One thing, just a company's website, if it talks about it at all on the front page, they're doing something.
No, that's good to know. And then what do you do? Like, let's say that you're a consumer and you buy from a place because they're local and they're not sustainable, but you want them to be because you want to support, you know, the local business, or maybe they're a large business and you just want them to do the right thing. How do you kind of call for that business to step it up as far as their sustainability?
Well, it depends on if you're obsessed with it or not. I mean, I just when I'm buying something and I really believe in supporting our local economy as much as I possibly can, I'll say it. I'll just say, you know, in the plastic straws or something like that. You know, here, take this back. We don't need this.
Yeah.
Why are you giving out these plastic bags? Or, you know, or here, instead of making them defensive, I prefer to use this. I think they do listen, and I mean, you're their customer. If you say it and somebody else says it, by gosh, if that's twice a week, they're going to be thinking, people are talking about this. Let's do it. So it's really a collective effort when you think about it. All of us play a big part in this.
And you mentioned, no, absolutely, I agree. It's up to all of us, obviously, to make these changes together. Like you said, the power of one. And then talking about it as well and getting the information out there. So I know that you talked about things that businesses can do as far as green purchasing policy, waste management, minimizing waters. Are there other things, like for businesses that are listening right now and are interested in being more sustainable? Maybe, I mean, I have a list of things, but I would love to hear your list of things that businesses can start to do. Well, everything from planting trees and, you know, zero-scaping. I know you talked about transportation options, sustainable cleaning products.
Transportation. Sometimes, you know, you'll have a small shop that says, well, you know, what can I do with this? I drive a hybrid myself. But, well, you know what? If you've got a parking lot out there, look at it and stripe a couple of parking places right in front for, you know,
hybrids,
energy efficient cars,
bicycles,
or electric vehicles. Yeah, stick, you know, if you can put some charging stations in, but you can do little things that just speak volumes about what your values are, and they really aren't going to cost you anything.
I remember
I
was just saying, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a local Tampa business that gave their employees a benefit every month if they bicycled to work. Like just those sort of little creative solutions to encourage it.
And carpooling. A lot of companies will just organize quick, easy carpools. That's good for everybody. It saves the employees. It saves the environment. It also speaks volumes about your values. leadership can play a huge role in this. Just by talking to all of their stakeholders about what matters to them. And be honest. I mean, Anderson was incredibly honest, and I think he set the tone for this. You know, he would talk openly about their sins, so to speak, but their real commitment on fixing them. And in doing that, he created this team atmosphere. He said, you know, nothing ever in the history of that company did more for their morale than this commitment to sustainability. And it became a defining characteristic of that company. So even if you're doing nothing, but you look at all of your employees and you say, we're going to fix this. We're in this together. Let's do it. And you let your customers know, my gosh, the momentum, the goodwill that comes out of that is amazing.
No, absolutely. Leadership is so important. And then also it's about the leadership of our elected officials. Like we have to elect environmentalists because they're the ones that are making the laws that are governing all of us.
Yeah. Well, we need to have people who understand the importance of the interrelationship of these pillars. And again, it's not everybody's literacy.
Well, a lot of people, yeah, I mean, they don't understand it. So, and it's a lot of, it takes a lot to kind of have the basic understanding. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa. If you have any questions, send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. We are discussing sustainability in business with local expert Sharon Hannah West, who is a graduate instructor of ethics, law, and sustainable business practices. So when we're talking about businesses and you know, businesses in building sustainability, are there any cities that reward businesses for doing the right thing and building green?
Probably the first one that comes to mind, of course, would be in Oregon, Portland. Portland was one of the early adopters of sustainability, and they really did that with their planning process. The story on that one is that after World War II, the city planners basically looked at Portland, drew a circle around it, and said, this is where we're going to build this city. You know, we're going to build it up to that. And then after that was the green area. And they were not supposed to push past those boundaries. Now, the reality of it is it worked beautifully for them, and it made a very, you know, walkable, livable city in the United States, which, you know, contrast to the practices of many, which was basically sprawl. And when you practice sprawl, it comes back to bite you through transportation, through traffic problems, through, you know, all of the things and the services that we have to supply to those areas. So building a core, the, you know, kind of the old style core, which originally New York and Chicago, San Francisco were all built that way originally, is kind of the ideal now that we're looking back to. So yes, they do a lot of that sort of thing, and other cities do too. Orlando has a big program now. We've had a couple of interns working over there, and they've also passed some interesting regulations. For instance, if you don't build an energy-efficient apartment building or high-rise, you have to pay the difference. It's not passed on to your lessees.
Hmm. And it looks like we have a couple of callers with some questions. Let's go to Mike in Japan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling. You have a question for Ms. Hannah West?
Well, this is a problem that actually I've been working on for about 10 years.
I can't hear him.
What spawned it was the Occupy Wall Street. Remember back in 2011? Everyone's protesting, and I just want to encourage kind of a higher thinking. You know, we live on a finite planet, correct? There's only so much stuff on our planet, so much resources, and we have a business model that is built on the idea of infinite consumption through something called CAGR, which drives ROI. So what I realized was we can't really, I mean, all this is great Band-Aid stuff, but until we change the fundamental business model, which is driven on this idea of infinite consumption, infinite growth, GDP, all this stuff is built on this idea of infinite. our planet is finite, and unless we change our model. Now, the good news is this. There's something called the blockchain, and that the whole idea of the blockchain is these new kind of entities called DAOs. So I would encourage folks to look into decentralized autonomous organizations and the blockchain, and I don't know how much your specialist knows on that at all.
Sharon, you had mentioned that you couldn't hear the first part of it. Were you able to hear him?
I can't hear. I couldn't hear any of it. I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know why. I don't know if there was a problem with the sound or not. He was talking about blockchain. If you want to elaborate on, I'm not unfamiliar with it, so I can't.
I certainly can't say I'm an expert on blockchain, but what was, how was he trying this in?
I didn't hear
any of it. I'm sorry.
But my main point is, We have a business model built on infinite growth. And unless we change that business model, we can't change anything. And everything is merely...
And Mike, I don't mean to interrupt, but she can't hear you, so I'm just going to try to translate. And Mike, thanks a lot. Not trying to cut you off, but... Sharon, he's saying that we have a business model that's based on infinite growth, that the planet isn't infinite. We can't consume at an infinite rate. So he said that all these things are Band-Aids. And he suggested somehow, and we're not sure how blockchain fits into this, but he said blockchain fits into this. So...
I'm not sure how he's saying that blockchain fits into this, but I mean, in calling it a Band-Aid, perhaps, but to expect a sudden, 360-degree spin or 180 is also, I think, not necessarily something that we can expect to happen. We have to take steps to this, hopefully rapid steps. But yes, business has to grow. So how do you grow when your business models are basically designing for the dump, right? Everything became disposable post-World War II because that's the way we were going to grow the economy then. Disposability was sold to us. Prior to that, society, rewarded thriftiness. You know, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers regarded stuff differently than we do now. And so the idea was we would just make more and more stuff, take more and more resources, make stuff, design it for planned obsolescence, and then we'd have to buy more. Well, that's the old business model. And so the new one is different. The new one is based on changes, like take-back legislation. We've got more than 27 states now that are saying to the electronics industry, we're not taking your stuff to the dump anymore. When you're finished with it, you take it back. So when they make a keyboard, they have to look at it and say, hey, we're going to get this back to recycle. So maybe we better design it differently or make it very recyclable so we can capture those resources. Companies, particularly the big ones who have been involved in this for a little while, they understand that old model of just buy it, use it, throw it away, and buy another one.
And Sharon, we don't have that in Florida yet, do we? We don't have the take-back requirement.
Well, no, we don't. And the Southeast has been a little late to the game with some of this stuff. But we see a big, big movement here in Florida now. In fact, if you had told me 5 years ago that we would be having the conversations that we're having with companies, customers and everything locally and hearing, the comment and the passion about this, I would not have believed it. So I'm one of those people who I'm optimistic about it.
What I think Mike missed was the early part of the discussion where we were talking about Ray Anderson's company Interface, and yeah, it's basically a carpet company based in Georgia, and he produces less waste than he consumes. He's actually contributing to the environment because he's not creating a lot of waste. Just remind us a little bit about what Ray was able to do at Interface Carpet, and is that company still in business?
I think she said it's the only one, though, right?
No, it's not the only one. Now every carpet company that They all, it was funny, I went to a conference, probably about 6 years after Ray had come to speak, and there was a business display in the lobby, several of them, and, it was rival carpet company, and they were just like Interface, they're doing things just, so those kind of compliments are really good. But what they were able to do is, make this whole idea of sustainability, which is, it was very, very profitable for them. And Interface is not just a local company. They sell in 11 countries. No, they manufacture in 11 countries and they sell in 110. And they were more than $1.5 billion. Are they in business? Yes. They're still the biggest.
And then it looks
Ray Anderson passed away, but his mission did not.
It looks like we have another caller.
He built a better mousetrap and everybody else got on board.
Yeah. But again, too, it was a business mousetrap that did it. That's
exactly
what we have to do. Yeah.
All right. We're almost down to the end of the show. Jackie's calling from Clearwater. Jackie, we may have some phone problems here, but what's your question?
I want to thank the hosts for doing the show. I want to thank Sharon Hannah West. I've learned more in the last 45 minutes than all year long about what I'm passionate about. I have an idea for a project. I know we're coming to the end of the show, but I was wondering if there's a way to get in touch with Sharon Hannah West to discuss my idea, which encompasses education, environmentalism, teaching kids to be stewards of our earth. It encompasses recycling, and it will really help the environment and help our community. So is there a way I can get in touch with Sharon Hannah West to discuss it?
Sure. I mean, anybody that is interested in this, I'm happy to talk to, and you can tell I like to talk a lot about it, but it's an easy email address. It's shannahshannah@usf.edu.
Thank you so much. Thank
Please
you all for the show.
To contact me.
And we'll put links on the page as well.
Okay. And thank you all. This was very informative, very educational.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it, Jackie. I mean, we definitely try to bring some of the best guests and provide, information that I think that it's important to everybody, to have these discussions. And it looks like we mainly have time for like maybe one or two more questions.
So, Sharon, is there a list of the most sustainable companies in the U.S.? Is there a list that you guys put out or somebody puts out?
I don't. There are lots and lots of entities that do this sort of thing. But yes, you can just Google it. Top 100 sustainable companies in 2020. It'll be 2019. And you'll see some. And what I do for verification purposes is because, let's face it, they're going to rank these companies based on certain criteria. So if they're using different criteria, the list may not match. But oftentimes you'll see repetitors on various lists, and then you know what they're doing. And we have to, vet these sources too. You want to look at who's behind it. Is it an industry list that's self-generated, patting each other on the back? Okay. Or is it maybe more objective? But it's a quick search. You can kind of self-educate that way.
And we need to be good consumers and avoid the greenwash and be aware of it when we see it.
Yeah. It's coming back to bite more than it used to, so I think companies are also aware that they have to be careful about the greenwashing. And as I tell my students, we don't look at just what they say. We look at what's behind what they say, the data, and we also look at what they don't say. If they're talking about, we do all of these projects to, help our local community, but we're really not doing anything in the environmental sector, then that speaks volumes.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been listening to a Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, everyone who's keeping WMNF going. And thanks, Rob, for providing us the news that is coming up. And also, I want to remind everybody that Sean Canaan, to stick around to listen to Midpoint, because Sean Canan, he's going to be talking to a teacher who's concerned about the push to reopen the school's in-person classroom education.